Thank you, Simi, for welcoming me and for helping to put together such a beautiful service. So I would really like today to talk a little bit about mercy. About mercy. We live in an era of mercilessness. Any of us who have seen things like what it looks like on the television with news casters and their oversimplification and their blaming and telling us that we'd be better off if they were eliminated. When we hear things like that, we can be excused for believing that mercilessness is our only choice. And I was just struck about how merciless our culture has become when I did a little bit of research about mass shootings. And that's the epitome of mercilessness. And, you know, people can go and buy these assault weapons and enter to parades or nightclubs or children learning to read in elementary school and to shoot them. And when I looked up the statistics, I was shocked to learn that just in January of this year, we've had 56 mass shootings in the U.S. 87 people have been killed and 205 wounded just in January of 2023 in the United States. So it's not surprising that we're living in fear. And when we're afraid, we tend to lash out and try and keep ourselves safe. But part of why we're engaged in a spiritual practice is to look deeply and find better ways than simply lashing out. And we need to be the people who live by mercy rather than by mercilessness. So today I want to do a little bit kind of a different talk than I've done in the past, which is to share stories of mercy so that we can restore our balance and keep ourselves safe from falling into mercilessness. So I want to talk a little bit about what mercy is and how we might practice being more merciful towards ourselves and towards other people. So the first story I want to tell is from the 17th century, from a Japanese Zen master named Bankei Yotaku. So Bankei once entered an extended retreat, and people from all over Japan came to join him. And one day, the students began to notice that someone at the retreat was stealing things. They told Bankei about it, but he wasn't willing to take any action. And then the next day, the students caught the man who was stealing, and they told Bankei about it. And once again, Bankei ignored the whole incident and did nothing to the thief. And finally, people objected that they could not go on with this retreat when they knew there was a thief among them. Everyone asked Bankei to take the matter into his hands and expel the thief. They said they would all leave the retreat unless Bankei sent the thief away. But Bankei said this, "Friends, you are wise. You know what is right and what is wrong. This brother of ours does not know right from wrong like you. If I do not teach him, then who will? I'm not going to expel him, even if it means that you all will leave. I'm going to keep him beside me." And so the thief heard everything that Bankei said and was moved by his compassion and big heart. He burst into tears and swore to himself that he'd never steal again. So Bankei was willing to have mercy on this man, even if it meant that all the other students left his retreat. I find that remarkable. So mercy isn't a word that comes up in our culture too much. And in my Zen practice, it doesn't come up that often. But I think mercy is a really important practice. Mercy asks us to take a step beyond empathy and a step beyond compassion. So let's talk a little bit about empathy and compassion so we have a clear idea what those are. So empathy means to feel with another person, to actually be willing to feel what another person is feeling, whether that's pain or joy. And we are wired for this. We have mirror neurons in our guts. It's where our idea of a gut feeling comes from. We can have a gut feeling about what another person is going through, and that's empathy. And I think we've known empathy for a long, long time, probably developed this quality before our thinking quality developed, because we had to feel with our tribe to know when there was danger. And empathy is this really important social foundation. And it's a gift that we have, but not all of us have that. So some people have differences in their brains and their bodies that make empathy really difficult. I hear this is true for people that are sociopaths or narcissists, that they don't feel empathy. So those of us who do feel empathy are very fortunate, because it's a really lovely thing to be able to have, this ability to feel with another person. Now, compassion is a step beyond empathy. Compassion means acting on our empathy. So with the empathy, we feel another person's distress, and with compassion, then we take an action to help. Empathy is the feeling, compassion is the action. And mercy is a particular kind of compassionate action. And it has some qualities that I'd like to talk about and share in stories. But one of the qualities is that with mercy, we treat someone by letting go of our power over them. We act compassionately with mercy by letting go of our power over them. So here's a story about that. A mother once approached Napoleon seeking a pardon for her son. And Napoleon replied that the young man had committed a certain offense twice, and justice demanded his death. "But I don't ask for justice," the mother explained. "I plead for mercy." And Napoleon replied, "But your son doesn't deserve mercy." "Sir," the mother said, "it would not be mercy if he deserved it, and mercy is all I ask for." "Well then," Napoleon replied, "I will have mercy." And he spared the woman's son. So if we have mercy only for those we believe deserve mercy, then it isn't mercy. If someone deserves to be set free, then setting them free is justice, not mercy. So think for a moment of someone who has wronged you. Just call to mind a person who's wronged you. And maybe this person is someone who has not expressed regret or sorrow about the actions they took against you. And maybe this person is someone who has not apologized to you for what they've done. Justice doesn't ask that we release them from our power. We might choose in a just world to hold on to our power over them, but mercy asks us to release the power of our anger, the power of our distance from them. Not because they deserve it, that would be justice, but because they don't deserve it, that would be mercy. So mercy means releasing our power over another. And oftentimes, mercy is something we offer to someone that we're in a relationship with. And relationships entail power. So for instance, a parent has power over a child. An employer has power over an employee. A member of the in-group has power over a member of the out-group. And these power relationships are subtle, and power usually flows both directions. So in the story about Napoleon, of course, Napoleon had power over the mother. He's the emperor, right? He has a lot of power. But have you ever noticed that organized mothers can be very powerful? They've brought down governments. Yeah? So mothers have power even in that. We could think about congregations and pastors, and often we think of a pastor having power over a congregation. But a congregation can withdraw that power from a pastor. And the reason I bring up these examples is that power relationships are seldom just one-sided. And so what I'd like to do is invite us to look deeply into our power, especially in places where we don't feel like we have any power. And particularly, let's do that in remembering this person who has wronged you. So how might it feel to give up the power of resentment against that person? How might it feel to give up the power of anger against that person? Or how might it feel to give up the power of self-righteousness about that person? Mercy asks this of us. You know, really, we in this community, in this congregation, are the powerful ones. We're powerful economically. We're powerful socially. We're powerful historically and racially. In many ways, we are powerful. And mercy is power's antidote. Mercy asks us to release our self-righteous power. And instead, it offers us the ultimate power, which is love. The Dalai Lama calls this releasing of power emotional hygiene. I love that. Emotional hygiene. So to be merciful is to release our power. And in doing so, we find freedom. Okay, so here's another story. Stephen McDonald was a young police officer in 1986 when he was shot by a teenager in New York's Central Park, and the incident left him paralyzed. So Stephen said, "I forgave the shooter because I believe that the only thing worse than receiving a bullet in my spine would have been to nurture revenge in my heart." When the younger man was serving his prison sentence, McDonald corresponded with him, hoping that one day the two could work together to demonstrate forgiveness and nonviolence. Unfortunately, the young man died in a motorcycle accident 3 days after his release from prison. But McDonald still travels the country to deliver his message. So I find this powerful because Stephen McDonald, this police officer, had a choice. He could have mercilessly used his power as a police officer to pursue punishment and retribution against this young man. But he chose to have mercy by letting go of that power and softening his heart. Now, Stephen, I can imagine, being shot and paralyzed. It must have been a hugely traumatic thing. And I imagine he had an impulse to take his power as a police officer to make sure his attacker was locked up and the key was thrown away. And there's a lot of energy in our culture for this. You know, we think about an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, that retribution is the way to resolve an issue. But this police officer, Stephen, came to some kind of a deeper understanding. And I was really moved by what he said. I believe the only thing worse than receiving a bullet in my spine would have been to nurture revenge in my heart. And we have this idea of an eye for an eye, but luckily we also have this phrase, an eye for an eye leaves the whole world blind. I'm glad for Stephen. I'm glad he saw that mercilessness would imprison them both. So instead he chose freedom for them both. The freedom of mercy, the freedom of forgiveness, the freedom of the possibility of redemption. So another story, and this one I find difficult and very moving. On the morning of October the 2nd, 2006, Charles Roberts walked into a tiny one-room schoolhouse in the Amish community of Nickel Mines, Pennsylvania. And after abusing 10 young schoolgirls, he shot them, killing 5. Then he turned the gun on himself. Hours after the attack, a group of Amish people made their way to the house of the attacker's widow, Marie Roberts, not to burn the place down or to deliver a lecture, but they came to voice their concern for the couple's 3 young children. The Amish community donated money to help the family through the financial hardship of losing their breadwinner. On the day of Charles's funeral, several Amish families, some of whom had just buried their young daughters the day before, gathered at the small Methodist church where he was to be buried. Over half the funeral's attendees were Amish. So I'm really moved by this story on a lot of levels. One of which is, I know someone who knows those people directly and who knows some of the details about what happened. And it was horrible. It was unbelievably horrible what those families and those girls went through. And these Amish people took the practice of mercy seriously. I mean, of all the things we fear, what could be worse than this? To have someone murder our children. So were these Amish justified in being angry? Well, of course they were. And were they justified in seeking revenge, an eye for an eye? Well, of course they were. But instead, they had mercy on the killer and the killer's family. They really seriously practice the Jesus admonition to love your neighbors as yourself, even when their neighbor treated them horribly, and even when their neighbor didn't deserve mercy. And I take great heart in this story because I really believe that their practice of mercy shifted the world. There were so many people throughout the world that were inspired by their actions and by how a few bereaved families rose above retribution and revenge and lived this practice of mercy, even at an enormous cost to themselves. Yeah, very inspiring. So the Amish aren't alone in offering mercy. And just one quick story to end with here. The Chinese government came into Tibet in the late 50s, and they took over the monasteries destroyed monasteries imprisoned a great number of Tibetan lamas and monks. And one of the lamas, when asked after he got out of prison if he was afraid while he's being tortured and starved and held in these prison cells, he said, "Oh, only once. And it was when I thought my heart might harden against my torturers, and I was most afraid of losing my compassion." So being merciful isn't easy. It asks a lot of us. It asks us to give up our illusion of power and control and retribution. And after reading these stories, I hope I don't give the idea that people like the Amish are somehow different from us, and that those differences made it possible for them to practice mercy in ways that wouldn't be possible for us. Those people are just like you and me. And their way of life doesn't negate their human emotions. And so I have to trust that mercy is just as challenging for them as it is for us. And Mother Teresa once said that for love to be real, it must cost, it must hurt, it must empty us of self. And we can have empathy for another without giving up our power, and we can act compassionately towards another without giving up our power, but mercy asks us to do more. It asks us to have the empathy by feeling another person's pain, and it asks that we have compassion by acting on what we feel, but mercy also asks us to let go. Let go of our illusions of self-protection, and let go of our illusions of self-righteousness, and most of all, to let go of our illusion of power over another. And this may sound really hard, but there's good news here. And the good news is this: when we can let go of our self-centered concerns and act with mercy, then we find that we are liberated. We are free. And we're liberated from the fear that causes mercilessness. So thank you all for your kind attention. And I'm happy to chat if we have time, or maybe afterwards if we have time. I'm happy to chat and take questions or comments.